Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome again to Democratic Perspective. Sitting across from me is...
putting on his muffler and his
He does have a muffler. Yeah, it's a black muffler. I don't know what that means.
Baby is cold outside. It means, you know, Guido and the boys gave me a present once. That's all it means. Mike Cosentino here. We're kind of hanging on the beloved co-host and the intellectual, the always intellectual, Gary Lemaster.
Now, don't insult me.
Yeah, that's right.
In America, that's an insult. Calling an intellectual. Democratic Perspective began in April of 2011. And each year we have a wrap-up of the year show. This year, a couple of our producers...
Just like those big-time shows, huh? Like Washington Week in Review?
The big-time shows, that's
big-time. The other big-time shows.
This year, a couple of our producers couldn't come in, so it's just the three of us.
They couldn't.
They were sick, or they were out of town, or they're running for their lives. I don't know.
It's running from the law.
But we're here, and we wanted to talk a little bit about last year on Democratic Perspective and just give you a quick idea of what we did. First, we did eight shows, I think, on Yavapai College controversy. And Yavapai College is a wonderful little college over in Prescott, but they had been taking massive amounts of money out of the Verde Valley and spending it, planning to spend 95%, 97% of it over on the other side of the mountain. We broke that story. It started out with a conversation with an ex-professor at the school, and we had heard him gripe for years, but when we started asking questions, then we began to get some material, and that led us to Bob Oliphant. So Democratic Perspective broke that story.
I want to mention that is an ongoing story. Bob Oliphant, Ruth Wicks, still have a committee together and are trying to form, like a Maricopa system, where Yavapai has control of its own destiny. They cut so many classes, is what, I mean, the rank and file, the average Verde Valley citizen saw that where there were three pages of English class offerings, now it's down to eight. This semester,
whether it's still ongoing, Mike. I mean, in other words, we have not really. There's the solution, folks, is either they distribute the money fairly, or we actually control a college on our side of the Black Hills or the Black Range. And what Mike is talking about is there's an ongoing group. Gary, are you still a member?
I'm still a member. Yes.
And you're still campaigning to have independent control over the college facilities.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I should point out that it is, as these guys said, it is an ongoing story. And the 10-year plan, which was passed, which would have moved, the majority of the dollars into the Prescott area from the Verde Valley, is still in force. It has not been rescinded.
That's right.
They've made some concessions. They've
had a bunch of meetings.
Yes.
They appointed some committees, and they're going to do what they want.
And they're in full damage control, and they've saved the Sedona campus for now.
That's true.
But the 10-year plan is still in force.
Because I believe if it wasn't for the show and the people involved,
and the people who joined in with this, the Sedona City Council, the Ollie, folks who go to Ollie out at the college, and also to give a lot of credit to Red Rock News, who came in on the story really hard. And so, but we did break a story. It did change their behavior, probably, or maybe.
Or delayed it.
And all we're trying to do, folks, is to keep the education money that is being collected from people in the Verde Valley spent here to educate our young people and older folks who want to go to a community college. So that was our first big story. We talked about immigration, the death penalty, mass incarceration, veterans affairs, extremist group, capital and wealth, its impact on our country, uranium mining, the coctopus, the giant coctopus, I guess is the correct pronunciation, giant mental illness, education, and jailing. And we interviewed a lot of candidates, one independent, mostly Democrats, because that's who will come on our show. But we interviewed pretty much everybody running for office in the state, and I was impressed with the quality of them. We did interview shows with the candidates for Sedona mayor and city council candidates. And we did some non-political shows on Cottonwood, down where Mike and Gary live, on shopping locally.
Old Town is a big deal.
And we did three shows on the Middle East. Yeah, Old Town. And we'll continue to do that. We like doing non-political shows. We got a lot of good feedback on the one on shopping locally. People like that. They're upbeat than when we're talking about the Middle East or something, you know. So, today, so we've done in the past, we've done things like the stupidest. We had everyone pick the stupidest piece of legislation passed by the Arizona legislature. But we need a full house. We need, you know, maybe 10 people to do that if everybody takes one thing, because it's hard to keep up with them. So we wanted to sum up the year today. And let's see. Let's start off with... I guess I should say I think the background running story is the concentration of wealth in the United States, and I'd like to talk about two studies that we all talked about before. One by Gillens and Page, and Gillens and Page studied 1,800 different policy decisions between 1981 and 2012, and they found that the impact of ordinary people was minimal. And the impact of the top 1% of the wealthy was huge. And so they never used the word oligarchy, which means rule by the rich, a small group. And they did an interview with Gillens on Talking Points Memo, and he said, we didn't use the term because it gives you an image of, you know, 10 fat guys sitting around smoking cigars in a back room. And it's much more complicated than that. It's much more systematic than that.
As I said before, it's a bunch of fat guys sitting around on yachts.
Yeah, it's 25 fat guys eating caviar, not smoking cigars.
Or at some large golf resort.
But it's tens of thousands of people in the structure. And the study they did was pretty devastating. It went viral on the internet. It spread all over because it shows that ordinary people have no impact. They think they have impact. So if you looked at the Arizona elections, if you're a Republican, you think, wow, I got my guys elected. But behind that, there's this massive amount of money, both in the Republican primary and selecting who you get to vote for, but also in the final. So people don't realize how deep and complete the control is, because they occasionally accidentally get something they want done, and because there's a conflict between the very wealthy and say Tea Party folks. And the very wealthy tend to be socially liberal and conservative when it comes to money. Mike,
I wanted to argue with that. I don't think if you looked at the election and you're Republican, you think you got your guy elected, because the extreme, I think everybody feels, Republicans and Democrats, that the people that we've elected don't represent them. And the reason is because they don't. The people who got elected represent, yeah, maybe some of them or a majority of them have R's after their name. So if you're an R, then you say, oh, good, R's got elected. But those people, those R's that got elected, don't represent you. They represent the people that paid for their election. So, and so if a majority of the people feel like their representatives are not representative, they're right. They are not represent R or D. They don't represent you.
So, for example, in the study, the governor and some Republicans supported the expansion of Medicaid. That's something that the people who run Arizona wanted. It's something that the Tea Party folks didn't want.
The people who run Arizona.
So if you look at it, the things that seem sort of liberal or middle of the road, really just barely middle of the road, that the governor and the legislature did are all things that the people who own big chunks of Arizona want. And if you don't have Obamacare, if you don't have the expansion of Medicaid, the hospitals, absorb huge debt from the people who can't pay.
Which they pass along to the rest of you who have insurance.
And before I turn this over to Mike and Gary, the other study that I really, really liked, and I went on Bloomberg.com, and they called Thomas Piketty's Capital in the 21st Century the most significant book on economics and politics in the year, probably of the decade.
Did we talk to him?
They hated it. They hated it. The conservative and right-wing guys, a lot of them who work for corporations and stuff, are furious at Piketty's book because this French economist wrote a book, 700 pages long, sweep of several centuries of history.
Became a bestseller.
Became a bestseller on Amazon and all over the web. They did not like that because Piketty's message was, and we had all been focusing on income inequality, and what Piketty did was show that unless something is done by public policy, the wealth of a small group of people who get their money, what's called rent in economics. Rent is not just the money you pay on an apartment, but it's all your money from your bonds and everything else and owning things. And Piketty showed that if nothing is done, the wealth will accumulate at a fairly rapid rate in a few hands. Right. And so, boy, there was a lot of dislike of that message. And if you have millions and billions of dollars, that's very upsetting because that's the last thing you want people to know is that you got all this money and you're going to have more and more of it and you're going to get more and more control over American politics.
The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. I mean, the cliches are true. But yeah, that's the miracle of compound interest applies, it still applies today as it did to the richest to the poor. And that's the scary part. It's not going to get any better on its own.
So Piketty's book, huge bestseller, discussed, filled with new information people hadn't seen before. And at first they were just baffled. They didn't know how to deal with it. But now the conservative and corporate economist knives have come out. So if you go on the internet, you're going to see Hell hath no fury like an academic or somebody in the pay of a major corporation when someone like Piketty comes along.
My favorite way to describe this whole economic situation is the old, we've gone back to, basically pre-depression era type economics.
Golden era.
The golden.
Robber barons.
The robber barons.
Yeah, certainly.
But at that time, what became eventually trickle-down economic theory was at that time called horse and sparrow economics.
Horse and sparrow.
Which I think is the best description I've ever
heard. We don't want to go into details
I think we should. It's if we feed enough oats to the horse, that enough, the droppings will end up having enough for the sparrows to pick over.
That's right. We'll cut that Medicare. We'll let those sparrows pick a little out of that.
Yeah. You have to let a little of the trickle down come through. By one measure, and this is a Pew research group, U.S. income inequality is the highest since 1928. It's the U.S. is more unequal than all the other developed world powers. The black and white income gap hasn't really changed. It still persists.
Oh, in post-racial America, the black and white income gap hasn't changed?
Nope. Not according
to
statistics.
What a shock.
It's actually gotten worse.
I know you guys are stunned, but you were stunned to find out that the wealthy controlled much of American policies, and I had to explain it to you in great detail.
Nobody explains it as well as the horse and sparrow. That's it. I'm going to have that put over the door of this office. Tom won't mind. The horse and sparrow lives here.
So one reason, folks, in the last year that we talked about income inequality, and the reason we talked about the coctopus and all these institutions that are trying to control the politics is because 47%, I think it is, of Americans, only 47% think that this huge growing gap between the rich and the poor is a problem.
Right.
So most people I don't think they don't understand it, or they don't know about it, or they have an ideology that they've been taught that tells them that it doesn't matter.
Or they don't even think about it.
But as Gary will tell you, income, and Mike will tell you, income inequality affects growth. right? In other words, if the money doesn't end up in middle-class hands, say you have a restaurant, how many billionaires come into your restaurant, right? But you money has to get to the middle class and working class folks to be spent. And if it's not spent, the economy kind of stalls out and stays static because most people don't have the money to spend and invest.
So when you have 900,000 Walmart employees on food stamps, in other words, you have 900,000 people working for a corporation, and we can repeat this with dozens of American corporations, on public assistance, what are we doing? We have the government publicly supporting the corporations in a really physical, visible way. And that contributes. I do want to mention that we had 15 minutes into the show. If we had an overarching theme, it was we were looking to what we were going to talk about at the end of the year. It was those stories, those issues that we talked about earlier that have overarching and many things involved in them. You know, the big stories, because so much is dependent on those big stories. Steve believes, we all believe, that income inequality is the big story of 2014.
It's the iceberg.
It affects everything.
It affects so much else.
It's the central story of it. But Mike is right. I mean, you know, if Walmart employees don't make a decent living, then they don't spend money, and the economy stalls out. And when you have the money concentrated in a few hands, in the Walmart family, who has basically, most of those people have never really done anything, they inherited all this money. When you have it that way, it doesn't get spent. It doesn't encourage the economy to get going.
Even the billionaires suffer if the middle class and lower classes don't have enough money to become customers. To buy shares.
And I agree. And most people would agree with that. And that's always been the self-balancing thing. People say, you know, supporters. But I read a thing the other day that said they don't need us anymore.
Because of the international, the global aspect of
the economy. Their globalization has created an economy that they don't need us. They don't need us buying their widgets. That's what's scary.
I think that they do. But what I think we should do a show on this next year is the impact of automation. And automation's always seemed sort of neutral in terms of creating some jobs and getting rid of others. But now the futurists and the technology guys who are looking at this think, you know, artificial intelligence can do almost everything we do, and that there's going to be an increasing, the need for people is going to decrease in jobs. What is the implication of that when large sections of the population are not really needed to work and everything is done, you know, by machine?
We'll grab the pitchforks and march on the powers that be.
The race to the bottom is still ongoing, though. You have businesses or corporations that still have their products, like for example, Apple. Still have their products or iPhones made in China in sweatshop conditions, sweatshop factories. They claim they've addressed it, but there was a story just a week or two ago that revealed that it's still ongoing. So what, in addition to automation, what's going on is this race to the bottom to find the cheapest labor in the world.
Yeah.
In order to make the products that can be sold for large amounts of money.
I think that's a scared Americans at work very, very deeply, this whole globalization, the fact that if they raise a protest, if they ask for much, their jobs will disappear. And it extends to things like Walmart, which Walmarts can't disappear because they need places to sell stuff, I suppose. But even in Amazon, you know, there's incredibly poorly paid workers and poor working conditions. It's hard to know what to do, Mike.
Well, there were other stories in 2014, so we can revisit this one as much as we want to. And maybe this is related, but it is related certainly. But the midterm elections were one, I think, result of is a big story that's going to permeate a lot of things. And talking about Arizona, we're talking about Republicans swept every statewide office in November. We got Doug Ducey and his 12 point They call it a trouncing of Fred Duvall, and which I was shocked that he won by 12 points.
See, the thing, scary thing for me, Mike, is that our candidates, we had absolutely great candidates. You know, Fred Duvall, Felicia Rodolini.
Great candidates.
Great candidates. David
Good,
Garcia.
Competent. Great records.
And just objectively, and I mean, the
Sandra
Arizona
Kennedy.
Republic is kind of corporate Republican, and they endorsed a bunch of them this year because the Republicans were so bad.
Yeah.
Republicans all won anyway, right, Mike?
Yeah, well, and then the extremists. You know, the people like John Hupenthal and Tom Horn lost their seats because they had extremist candidates get replaced.
You mean corruption got replaced by extremism?
Yeah, exactly.
This is improvement in Arizona, folks.
You know, I think if you want to sum up the Arizona elections, it's they proved that qualifications don't really matter, that money, meanness, and tribalism do.
Money, meanness, and tribalism. I like that. That's going to go right under the horses and the sparrow thing.
Dark money just poured into the campaign. I don't know if Republicans will rethink. The Koch brothers behind
did
a lot
song and
of
dance
this.
For the Kochs.
Yes,
by the way, it was and they, you know whether they approved of him or not. I heard Bill Clinton say the other day that Republicans, the GOP, is just not bothered by facts. They are just not bothered by truth.
It was an astonishing election because of the quality of our candidates, just objectively. It was also astonishing because of the amount of dark money. These series of court cases, starting with Citizens United, what's the latest one, McCutcheon versus the FEC, all these decided by the corporate members of the Supreme Court in favor of corporations. Corporations are people. Corporations have rights. You have no right to limit what corporations and very rich people can spend.
Money is free speech.
Money is free speech. This stuff is continuing to go on. And you see that in Arizona politics. And the nastiest stuff, well, it started out being the nastiest stuff, was in the GOP primary. And I think particularly for the governorship, they had a problem because they actually had a really good candidate in Scott Smith, who was really qualified and showed what he could do, and the knives came out.
Yeah, and as we've discussed in a show, the electric company,
APS
and SRP
basically,
Arizona.
You know, purchased Ooh. Their own regulators, you know, to run the Arizona Corporation Commission.
So APS is a privately owned company. It's owned by Pinnacle West. But it's governed by public rules because it has a monopoly. So the way the United States has always worked, we give you a monopoly because the monopoly makes sense, but we regulate you to make you sure that you don't screw people over. Okay. That's the bargain. And what APS did in this election was get absolute complete control of the Arizona Corporation Commission, which sets the rules for APS.
My favorite part of the election, I have to say, is Prop 122, which it's officially known as the Arizona Rejection of Unconstitutional Federal Actions Amendment. I prefer to call it Secession Lite.
Yeah.
It really and this was passed by the people or by the voters, the few that did vote. That it basically allows the legislature to ignore any federal law it deems unconstitutional, which has always been the role of the courts, not of the Arizona legislature.
Plus, it will set up, I mean, I don't know how much money we've lost on these cases. Our abortion laws have been thrown out again. I think three of them were thrown out this year. All this is taxpayer money being spent on these things. People were really happy. We had Michael Lacey in the show, and he got got almost $4 million settlement because Sheriff Joe sent him and had him arrested for something he said. Okay. But that money doesn't come out of Sheriff Joe's pocket. It comes from the Maricopa taxpayers' pocket.
Right, right.
So we're funding all of this nonsense, Gary.
The millions spent on 1070, the millions spent fighting the Dreamers Act, because they don't want to give brown people a driver's license.
Drive cars.
go ahead.
That's fine. Prop 122 is blatantly unconstitutional. I mean, it's so ironic that it's supposing to, you know, limit unconstitutional laws from the federal government, but it in itself is unconstitutional.
Yes, that's the irony, and I think fairly far over into conservative Republicans thought this was a very, very bad piece of legislation. It lost, interestingly enough, in Maricopa County. It won in the rural areas.
Did it really?
If you doubt it's unconstitutional, I refer you to Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution that is called the Supremacy Law, the Federal Supremacy Law. But the really disturbing part of this is that Doug Ducey supported it, our governor-elect, and so did our attorney general-elect.
So did all our local representatives.
All of our state legislators did. And the reason Ducey gave is that many federal programs cost Arizona, this is a quote, cost Arizona more than the state receives from the federal government. That's a blatant lie as well, because Arizona takes in $1.50 in federal funds for every dollar it contributes in federal income tax.
So it's just a way of slapping this. You know, what I'm thinking, guys, is that wages have been stagnant now for a couple of decades. And people's lifestyles going down. When this happens, when things are stagnant and nobody's situation is improving, particularly in a country like the U.S. where we really expect improvement, we expect the next generation to be richer than so forth and so on, you need a scapegoat, you know? And we all know what Nazi Germany's scapegoat was. And in the South, the whole process for 100 years was to turn poor whites against black folks. They were the scapegoat. They were the reason there were a problem. There's been all the anti-immigration stuff, which goes way back to hating on people, Scots-Irish people. So there always has to be a scapegoat. If things are going bad, if the wealth is accumulating in a few hands, if people don't see an increase in their wages and their benefits and their possibilities, you need a scapegoat. And the scapegoat has become the American federal government.
Let me read a quote. Yes, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say the immigrant, but the federal government.
No, I think the immigrants is a running thing.
Yes.
Black folks is still going on. African Americans are still viewed as part of the problem.
No, I like that.
But fundamentally, where they're getting the mileage is hating on the federal government.
Right. Even if those corporate Republicans that they've elected, I mean, the Republicans control both houses at the federal level. And yet, you still got people that will hate and blame on government for everything.
See, it starts a lot more recently with the civil rights movement and states' rights, which is what Proposition 122 is, states' rights by another name,
which is trying to return us to the Articles of Confederation and undo the Constitution.
That's right. And we've had programs. We had Michael Austin again to talk about the Constitution. The year before, we had two programs on the Constitution, what the Constitution actually says, folks, and what the founders thought, which is not a monolithic thing. You may hear they thought this, but there is, as Michael Austin said, no, they all thought this because they thought different things and had different policies. But I think, see, even behind the anti-immigration thing, Mike, is the hate of the federal government, because at the federal level, they know something's got to be done. There are these millions of illegal people living here. And they're not paying as much taxes as they would if they were working openly. They create a large society of people who are working illegally and getting around the system. So they're trying to solve it. So even then, you hate on the federal government because the federal government is not extreme enough for you. I don't know, Gary, how much do we spend on that wall down there? I mean, how much more can we spend?
Billions,
billions of bucks.
Under this regime, it's going to be... I want to read a quote from the Arizona Republic on immigration. Two things that are going to come back, we're going to see, especially in the Arizona legislature. And I'm loosely quoting, or at least agreeing with, the journalist roundtable that you can catch on PBS on Friday nights. that we are going to see another 1062-like law. That's the state still believes, the people in power still believe.
The right to discriminate law.
The right to discriminate, that you can, that if you own a business, that you don't have to do anything against your religious beliefs. We are going to see things, the anti-gay marriage. We're going to see things where, as the Republican legislature and the Republican governor try to, quote unquote, protect Arizona from gay marriage. So we're going to see some of that coming up. But
How is that protecting us?
I understand. I never understood,
Mag, is the people who think gay marriage is going to affect their marriage. I can't believe it. I mean, can't believe anybody thinks that. I mean,
Kathy Herod is in Doug Ducey's kitchen cabinet.
Oh my gosh!
And so she's.
I'm waiting for this quote.
Okay, the quote says, immigration, the hundreds of children, this is a quote from the Arizona Republic, the hundreds of children on the floor covered in aluminum blankets behind chain-link fences were not in a third-world country. They were in Nogales, Arizona, in a warehouse turned shelter for the thousands of mostly Central American young people. The immigration situation is they were there and they crossed through Texas. The surge in unaccompanied minors forced the Border Patrol to fly hundreds of children to Nogales, where they were kept in large warehouses. The move sparked anger in a state, ours, known for its aggressive anti-illegal immigration measures, and factored in the Republican primary for Arizona governor. Immigration also became a prominent issue in the courts in Arizona, as Arizona's fought to keep those driver's licenses that we also mentioned. The state lost, and immigrants began to get driver's licenses this week.
Go ahead, Gary.
In reality, if these kids hadn't been from Latin America, they would have been considered refugees, and we would have welcomed them with open arms.
Yeah, we couldn't find homes fast enough for them.
But because they were from Latin America, they got, you know, tied up in this whole, you know, morass of the immigration debate.
And we're Cuba, right?
And we're vilified.
With open arms.
Yeah.
They would have been political refugees, but because they're refugees from failed states with the highest crime rate, murder rate in the world, like Honduras, they're not welcome. They're enemies. The other thing that happened is this turned into a big Republican issue. Our border is out of control and stuff. And so what the administration did was explain what the law was in the United States in Central America through radio and television ads and so forth and so on. And basically the huge flood dropped to a trickle once they begin to get the idea that what they were being told by these guys who are making a bunch of bucks out of hauling them up here and trying to get them across the border wasn't true. They mostly stopped coming. So it was a scandal, a huge crisis that really didn't exist. It was ephemeral. It faded. Same way with the Ebola crisis. When the Center for Disease Control and all the other medical professions tried to control Ebola coming to the U.S., they made a couple of mistakes. But you'll notice that Ebola never arrived here. The only people who ever died of Ebola got it in Africa, and there were only a couple of them. And that even in Africa, in most countries in Africa, the Ebola, because we've sent American military personnel and other wonderful people like Doctors Without Borders have gone in, and the Ebola epidemic is declined to almost nothing. You don't read about it in the paper anymore, folks. So that was supposed to be another terrible, terrible thing that the Obama administration drew. But the truth is that it's not so much the administration, it's that the professionals had it under control. They're going to make mistakes. The same, you know, I'll even add in the campaign against ISIS. Oh, it won't work. Nothing will happen. It's slaps on the wrist. And these horrible airstrikes have really taken the oomph out of ISIS or ISIS, because they depended on looking victorious. And once they started taking casualties and didn't look so victorious, you know, a lot of their energy and stuff has dropped out.
This leads me to one of my favorite stories. Actually, it's a It's a number of stories we reported last year. It's a, I've lumped together in what I've called Scandalrama. The various scandals, the IRS, Solyndra, Fast and Furious, the Benghazi scandals that were all investigated by Daryl Issa and the House Oversight Committee.
They did a good job of really vilifying, of really making those things. Fox News did a great job.
It was one of the most intense propaganda campaigns in history, and it included our very own Paul Gosar, who was on the committee. And after, you know, 2 years of investigations, they really found nothing. And, you know, absolutely nothing that tied to the administration or to the White House. Most of the so-called scandals were not even scandals. And there was no wrongdoing. And I would point out that the direct cost of the Oversight Committee for investigating these is out-of-pocket direct costs were $26 million and counting. And the indirect costs of collecting literally millions and millions of documents and emails and providing them to the committee, the indirect costs of all the other agencies in the federal government is now approaching $1 trillion.
Holy crap.
$1 trillion.
Now we're starting. I'm about to say the Republicans don't care about the cost, because it's going to pay off so big at the polls.
As long as it serves their purpose.
As long as it serves their purpose, and this is both state and national, then it's fine. But when you start getting to where ISIS committees are costing that much money just to vilify the Democrats, to keep Benghazi alive, which they've said now for years is a non-issue.
And then the report comes out from the Republicans.
It says
there's no issue there. And what I liked ironically about the tax thing is the investigation, the scandal about the investigation of conservative groups who weren't really legally...
They were skirting the law.
I don't think they were skirting the law. They were guilty. I mean, the IRS is investigating them because they're all guilty of it, and so are the liberal groups who pretend to be social groups and are actually political groups. The liberals and conservatives, but it's mostly conservatives because they have more of these groups. But, yeah, they're all guilty of the IRS charges, but, you know, the IRS gets beat up for investigating it for stuff that they're guilty of.
In Benghazi, we've had 7 investigations and reports. All of them bipartisan except for one, which the most recent one, the 7th, was, you know, done by the Republican-led House committee.
That was the biggest non-story.
And found nothing. And they're still calling, they've voted for a special select committee to investigate Benghazi, which will cost, you know, much more. And still, after 7 reports, they still don't believe what they're getting.
I guess nothing makes me think less of the Republicans than using these phony things. They're so obviously phony, and where all the investigations say one thing, and they keep manipulating the evidence, and then they get caught manipulating the evidence, and it just goes on and on.
And
we talked
money.
About Solyndra, and Solyndra went bankrupt, and that was supposed to be a huge scandal a couple of years ago.
It was going to cost us millions,
all right?
We ended up actually making $5 billion off of the sale of the assets for providing the loan.
Yeah, and the other thing is that loan program has been a huge profit center for the United States. And when you invest in a bunch of startups, some of them are going to go belly up.
But overall, the program has been good
for taxpayers.
It doesn't matter. They got the lie out there, and the lie is believed.
That's true.
It's an out and out lie, and they know they're doing it. You talk about what makes you think the least of the Republicans. It's the lies and the constant lies, and as long as they lie first and they lie best, they will do well.
It's like Felicia Rodolini's campaign. The Republican charge is not as lies that she had no criminal trial experience. That takes one sentence to say, and you can say that a million times on ads. The explanation that the attorney general almost never does any criminal cases. They're all done by the county attorney. Takes four or five sentences to explain, and then people are still not sure you're telling them the truth. So it's that, you know, a lie, it takes so much time to undo a lie. Right, Gary? I mean, right. that's one of the problems. To explain the actual situation that is
our so-called news media has become a propaganda tool.
Oh, but that's actually, we can do a dozen shows on the media, believe me. And nobody would be louder than me.
Mike, you had another story that you wanted
four
to cover,
of them.
Right?
There's one national and three state. I want to talk about veterans health care. Just mention it. Veterans health care, boy, that's a national and state story, but for some reason, for lots of reasons, for good reasons, Phoenix VA is getting
more state hospital in the country.
It's more state than
special
national.
Attention. The length of the execution of Rudolph Wood, on July 23rd, he took his last breath. And once again, I'm getting these things out of the political.
This is capital punishment.
Political insider. Yes, I'm sorry. Capital punishment. The lengthy execution in Arizona of that where he spent so long dying. He took. They gave him 15 dosages of the drug, which they even Arizona said, okay, we're not going to use that again. We're not going to do that again. In fact, we're not going to execute anyone until this lawsuit is finished, and. And then, of course, the progress and the constant struggle on gay marriage, at least on the local level. We did want to talk about the fallen officers and the police shootings. I mean, we've got both sides of the coin here. I'm not always necessarily a big guy on. I'm telling both sides. I keep saying the name of the show is Democratic Perspective. We have a particular perspective here.
Right. And but, as the wealth gap between black folks and white folks has stayed steady, do you think that contributes to the agitation in places like Ferguson and the conflict between, you know, white police officers and black citizens?
I would say that you shouldn't have to take sides between the police and the, you know, minorities that have been abused by the police. I think we all want, you know, really good police forces, and we want them to represent us and serve us, and we want them to be safe. And so I don't think you have to make a choice between the two. I think we just want, you know, sound policing and fairness.
But this is going to be every thing for the foreseeable future is going to be a big deal involving police and shooting. I have this. There's a great website, 400 Honor the Fallen. They have a list of over 400 officers that have been shot in the line of duty, died in the line of duty this year. We will talk about Michael Ferguson and Eric Garner, Michael Brown in Ferguson. Thank you very much. That's what you're best for. Michael Brown in Ferguson and Eric Garner. Just atrocious deaths, and 13 or 14 more. Benson has a wonderful cartoon on the dead. Black men by police shootings unarmed, completely unarmed black men. Now, mistakes happen all the time. And as my cop friends tell me, you weren't there. But we're mentioning those things this morning as fodder for much more conversation.
We should mourn both, is my point.
Yeah, I mean, there were two policemen were assassinated in New York City. And you had Garner was killed for selling cigarettes by the single
without paying the tax.
And that's what, you know, I mean, poor people can't afford a pack of cigarettes hardly anymore, and so they buy them individually at a stepped up price. That's all he was doing, and to die for that is pretty shocking. Anything else? We've got maybe a minute left. We're going on. What, 3.5 years? More than that, right?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I do think that this legislature and this governor is the best is yet to come. Well, we will have no shortage of copy. I remember when Ev Meekham was governor and I was a reporter. Great, great copy. There's going to be lots of stuff to talk about in the next year.
So join us next week on Democratic Perspective.
DVID.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.